On behalf of VMware and Carahsoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, Creating New Digital Possibilities for Your Customers with VMware Multicloud Solutions. Today's speaker is Mike Wilkerson.
Thanks for joining us here and taking some time out of your busy day to let us share a little bit about what we're doing with cloud services here at VMware. Kind of want to set the stage for, you know, kind of what's going on in terms of driving the market or driving the trends in government IT towards cloud computing. It really, at the crux of it, is kind of the expectations for what the technology that government organizations rely on to get business done are changing, due in a large part to the emergence and rapid adoption that we're seeing of cloud computing. You know, most government organizations are looking to cloud infrastructure and services to help modernize and really revitalize, you know, sort of your mission services and your citizen services. In addition, customers are moving to the cloud to take advantage of things that will help improve productivity, improve efficiency, quality of service, help retire technical debt, hopefully shrink IT complexity, lower overall operational costs, and deliver new digital IT services, among other benefits. You know, at the end of the day, really the one thing that's sort of the holy grail, that's sort of the magic to the kingdom or the key to the kingdom, has to be the applications that IT is providing, both to internal users, both to, you know, mission users, and to, in a lot of organizations, constituent services. And so the real trend has been towards application modernization. And the reason why is, when you start to look at modern applications, it's really a combination of your existing applications and new applications that you're building and rolling out. When we talk to customers, many of them are going through some sort of app rationalization exercise and process and deciding how they're going to transform their application and overall IT landscape, whether it's to replatform an existing application or to, you know, fully modernize an existing application and leverage a new infrastructure model, either, you know, looking at refactoring into microservices or containerizing them, or, you know, deploying a multi-tier hybrid type of application, or in some cases, building a completely net new cloud native app, or just replacing it with some sort of SaaS-based platform. All of these decision points are things that around transformation that require some sort of, you know, conscientious decision based on, you know, choices around infrastructure and management choices. We see a lot of organizations are choosing a hybrid infrastructure approach to support the needs of applications. In fact, I read a recent study that said 93% of the organizations are committed to, or at least expressing an interest in, a long-term hybrid cloud strategy as a way forward. And sort of like, you know, what does that mean? You know, early on, hybrid, we really were limited to two choices, either on-premise private cloud or a public cloud. And a hybrid was sort of the commingling of the two in some sort of architecture that worked and made sense. Not necessarily simple, but, you know, that's what we had. Well, now we've got a variety of choices now with the advancement in cloud computing. The first being, and it's really, you know, hybrid is really about tapping into the right platform or combination of platforms that makes the most sense to you and your mission and your organization. You know, if we look at things from the left, like public cloud, the public cloud gives you, you know, it's this unique, innovative, differentiated set of services to build net new applications. Most all public clouds, you know, are available in some sort of on-demand consumption model to allow for, you know, an easily flexible pay-as-you-go consumption-based model. You also get the advantages of elastic capacity, rapid scalability. You know, in most cases, public clouds can be scaled and deployed in a much faster way than, say, traditional local clouds. Then you have, you know, kind of, you know, you have a local cloud, which is essentially providing that same public cloud service, but, you know, closer to an on-prem type of a capability. And really where you have that need is where you have applications that either due to some sort of geographical, like if you're at GDPR, if you're in the UK, in Europe, or some sort of data proximity requirement, security requirement, et cetera, the data can't be away from the compute. So you have to pull those resources locally. And now we've got this concept of an edge cloud. And really, that's another data proximity use case where you know, users in a remote location need to have the data close to the applications and close to the users, either due to latency concerns, in some cases, the ability or capability to work without a WAN connection, kind of your remote office scenario. And then lastly, is this notion of the private cloud, which is pretty self-explanatory. Most, if not all, organizations have built quite a substantial private cloud premise over the years through existing hardware investments. They're really purpose-built for specific applications. They're completely controlled, governed, and managed, you know, by you as the IT organization. So, you know, of course, you know, the notion of hybrid and being able to select what cloud model works for you, simple as it sounds, does bring its own level of complexity. The first being operational inconsistencies, how things work and how you manage and the skills and tools required to do things, you know, even your workflow engines and your workflow tools for things that are on-premise in your private cloud and one cloud may not necessarily work, you know, in a public cloud or in an edge cloud. Skill sets may be different. You know, I've seen, you know, an interesting report that said, you know, almost 90% of organizations are citing that their number one challenge with moving to cloud has to do with the skill set gap in terms of what they're managing today and what they have to manage, you know, on-premise or in the cloud. A longer time frame to be able to move workloads from on-prem to the cloud. Different tools and management, how I manage and do things, what my workflow engine is, and what my governance is on-premise or in my private cloud. It just has historically varied substantially from what I'm doing in my public cloud. I have multiple sets of tools. I have different security models. And with that comes, you know, inconsistent SLAs and capabilities. You know, as I said before, private cloud, it's much harder to scale up as rapidly or to respond as rapidly without over-provisioning and overspending as it is, say, in the public cloud, when you can spin up, you know, a server instance in a matter of minutes to respond to, you know, outages or unexpected outages or bursts in compute cycle requirements, you know, maybe a pandemic response. Now, how quickly can you do that? That seems to be, you know, something that's near and dear to a lot of us here lately over the course of the past year. And then lastly, the other challenge we have is, like I said, incompatible security and governance. You know, I have, you know, more control over my on-prem firewalls and rules and things that I do, you know, from a micro-segmentation perspective in my private cloud, that's different, or a different set of tools that's used to do that in my public cloud, whether it be, you know, some sort of firewall services, whether it be edge protection, whether it be, you know, penetration testing, antivirus, et cetera. I've got all these different tools that are doing the same thing, but I have to have them because of that, you know, operational inconsistency that we talked about as the foundation of the, you know, a big gap between private cloud and public cloud or different clouds. There's some good news. You know, it's not all bleak and it's not all, you know, challenging and, you know, things that are going to keep us, you know, pulling our hair out for the, you know, from an IT perspective. And that is, you know, you look at something like VMware, we provide VMware Cloud Foundation. And what we've done is we've teamed with multiple different cloud vendors to be able to deploy our vCloud Foundation suite of tools, which is our vSphere, vCenter, NSX, and vSAN tools that run in the public cloud enclave. What that allows you to do is, and we'll go into this in a second, but the goal is to give you that same consistent look and feel and tools and user experience that you have in your private cloud and a public cloud. And that could be, you know, again, whether today it's in a public cloud where it's completely customer managed and owned, customer does all, you do all the break fix, working with like someone like VMware, you do all the patching, the updating, et cetera. Then there's the VMware managed cloud, which is, and we're going to talk about this more in depth with our relationship with Amazon, with VMware Cloud on AWS. That's a fully managed service by VMware. And essentially what you've done is you've taken that line of demarcation and moved it up the stack. And what I mean by that is everything that's sort of from that hypervisor layer, and I've got a diagram that'll go over this and kind of explain it. But the concept is everything that's from the hypervisor layer horizontally and vertically, or horizontally, we take care of. So all the patching, the upgrading, the break fix of everything from the hypervisor layer down to the hardware, it's all handled by VMware. We don't The only thing that we do not touch and manage and have access to are the virtual machines themselves that are customer owned. And then there's the partner managed VMware clouds, which is essentially that same vCloud Foundation suite of tools. It's just being provided by from a different partner as part of our VMware cloud provider network. Think of someone like IBM SoftLayer or Microsoft Azure with their AVS service, or Google or Oracle. The neat thing about all this is, from a private to public cloud perspective, having that same common set of tools at the hypervisor layer makes moving workloads around between clouds a lot easier than it's been in the past. And I'll go over that here in a second. So, we can't talk about benefits without also talking about some unique challenges. And here's what we're seeing as we talk with customers are some of the challenges that are within government IT today. And it's not germane to government. This is true whether you're, in a lot of cases, whether you're state, local, federal, even in the financial sector. There's this perception that the public sector space is in a technology lag, right, wrong, or indifferent behind the private sector. That there's too much of a reliance on traditional infrastructure, meaning there's been a big investment made into, on-premise hardware and software that's being leveraged today. That there are, one of the things that we're seeing is there's definite, siloed and incompatible IT systems. Meaning, a lot of times, a lot of the hardware and the software were sort of purpose-built, purpose-bought, specific for, a specific workload or workload type. So you don't have a lot of, there's some incompatibilities as far as being able to, repurpose things from one platform to another. Another thing that we're seeing a lot of, more than we've seen in the past, has been some real scrutiny on any IT spending, particularly in cloud, where customers and oversight agencies want to see what sort of ROI are you getting on every dollar that you spend. Seeing a lot of that lately. And then the ever-present challenge of security, compliance, and resiliency. We've got our recent, it was a private sector problem, but it was a problem nonetheless of, when systems get hacked, how much havoc that can wreak on a company, on a country, on an economy, if security is lagging or if there's a lapse in compliance or security. So again, all things that are not necessarily unique to government, but are challenges within the government IT space that we're seeing today. So with kind of all this as a backdrop, VMware and Amazon got together a couple of years ago, probably back in 2017, and said, look, VMware, as two market leaders, VMware sort of being the de facto standard or the market leader in private cloud enablement through the vSphere and vCloud Foundation suite of tools. You could argue we had, VMware had the lion's share of sort of the private cloud enablement, but we lacked that reach into the public cloud space. Conversely, Amazon and AWS, the definite world leader, in the public cloud space, around the globe, broad, rich set of tools, rich set of applications, super flexible and easy to consume, cloud services, extremely scalable, but had challenges in reaching back into the private cloud space. So the two companies got together and said, what if we could do this? What if we could take our vCloud Foundation suite and allow customers to run that as a managed service offering inside of, an Amazon data center? And that's where VMware Cloud and AWS got its start. So what are some of the advantages? Going back to some of the challenges. The first is this notion of seamless migration. Really what that means is to move a workload in simplest terms from a VMware powered private cloud or infrastructure, on-premise infrastructure, into VMC on AWS, you're using the same exact tools that most VMware customers use today to move workloads around, whether it's vMotion, whether it's Site Recovery Manager, and that's to not only move workloads up to the cloud, but to bring them back. So you could have an application running in the cloud that's running in, vSphere on-premise today, running in the cloud, and the amount of time it takes to do a vMotion exercise across your connection, and at the same time, bring it back. There's no need to have to rebuild, re-architect, retool, refactor anything in that workload. In some cases, customers don't even have to re-IP based on their networking schemes and architectures. It's delivered as a service. So as I said before, it's that same, it's that entire vCloud Foundation suite, hardware, software, everything consumed as a single entity that's fully managed by VMware. No more VMware administrators having to patch vSphere, having to patch NSX, having to do break fix on a host. That's all taken care of as part of the service by VMware. Consistency, how you manage your vCloud, your instantiation of vSphere and tools in the cloud is exactly how you manage it on-premise. It's vCenter. Okay, there's nothing magic to it. It's simply vCenter. So it's the same tools, it's the same capabilities, it's the same. If you're leveraging some sort of workflow engine to do orchestration, like a ServiceNow or like a vRealize, the VMC on AWS instance just appears as another endpoint in that overall topology. From a security perspective, the VMware Cloud on AWS and GovCloud is in its final, we're in the final stages, literally in the final stages of achieving our FedRAMP High ATO. We have our comments back from the PMO. We have our kickoff call scheduled for next week. And the comments back were extremely low for a high offering. So our expectation is to be published in the marketplace by the end of this month. That's June. And then lastly, modern application support. The platform itself is what I like to call sort of future-proof. What I mean by that is, along with running traditional legacy virtual machine workloads, you can also take advantage of Kubernetes or run some sort of microservices type of workloads on the same platform and coexist on the same platform as traditional virtual machines. So it supports both. Here's really more of an overview and topology of what the service looks like. VMC on AWS is consumed and purchased by the host. And what that means and what that includes is it's the vCenter, vSphere, vSAN, and NSX, and all the underlying hardware and networking plumbing that comes along with it. Again, it's riding on top of AWS bare metal. We're running on i3 and i3en AWS hardware. It's not nested on top of EC2. It's straight on the bare metal. The only thing we don't have access to by design are the virtual machines themselves that are customer managed and maintained. Everything from the above the hypervisor is customer owned. We provide a capability that we call hybrid linked mode, which allows you to link your on-premise vCenter into your cloud instantiated version of vCenter to give you that single pane of glass management. That allows you to do your vMotions, that allows you to do everything that you do on-premise in vCenter, you'd also do it in the cloud. It appears as one pane of glass. Like I said, if you're leveraging some sort of third-party tool like a ServiceNow or like a vRealize type of tool for workflow or orchestration, essentially, VMware Cloud on AWS, if you're familiar with Amazon's terminology, we're just a VPC inside of AWS's data center. So VMC would appear as another endpoint in your workflow engines. Another thing that's unique about our relationship with AWS is if you have existing AWS services that you're using today, like EC2, like Lambda, like RDS, et cetera, any of the services that they have in their catalog, via NSX, we provide a 25 gig high speed, low latency link that's depicted by this arrow here. What that means is that gives you access to all your native AWS services that you're running. So what we see a lot of customers do is they've got some things running in Amazon back here. Let's say they're running databases in RDS. They'll move their on-prem tier 1 or layer 1 application servers up into VMC and link it across this high speed link. One big advantage here across this interface is as long as you're in the same availability zone in the same region, any data that is transmitted across this high-speed link, there's no egress cost for that. The only time you would incur egress would be anything that comes from the VMC on AWS VPC out to on-premise or after the internet. So you can imagine if you have a two-tier model today where you're doing a lot of transactions between, you know, on-premise and into a data, like an Amazon data center, by moving those workloads into VMC, you cut out that egress cost. It's fully supported and fully staffed by VMware. We have a support center out in Colorado and a team here in Virginia that's U.S. citizen, U.S. soil, that provides break fix support. It's available in multiple flavors, one being on demand, so it's essentially a pay by the hour. The other is you can reserve hosts for either a 1-year or 3-year term, meaning, you know, those hosts, and that's all the hardware and the software included, is licensed to you for a period of time for either a year or a 3-year period. As I mentioned, we're FedRAMP in process. We should have that by the end of this June. And we also touched on, you know, having direct access into those backend native AWS services. This truly is what differentiates the VMC offering from other VMware-powered clouds, is the fact that it's the only one that's fully supported and managed by VMware. And having this direct access to AWS native services is a tremendous asset. So let's quickly look at some use cases that we're seeing in the government space. And these are not in any kind of numbered order, just going from left to right. The first is app modernization. We do have a lot of customers that are looking to, you know, instead of just moving to the cloud, they want to fully rewrite applications and containerize them, or, you know, leverage microservices or leverage Kubernetes. Again, they can coexist and run on the platform. Cloud migration. What we're seeing here is we've had several customers that have shut down data centers, not all of them, but they've shut down like one or two remote data centers, and they're moving all those workloads into VMC on AWS as their second site. Some call it data center evacuation. We have a tool we call Hybrid Cloud Extension, HCX, which allows us to do, essentially think of multi-threaded parallel vMotions to do data center moves. In fact, we have one SLED customer who evacuated an entire data center over a weekend. And that was, I think it was over 900 to 1,000 virtual machines that were all moved out and evacuated into VMC over a weekend, over a two-day period. The next use case is data center extension. And this is sort of that bursting capability where you have your on-premise data center and you want to say you need some extra compute, networking, and storage cycles. Maybe for just a short period of time. Maybe you work for an organization in Treasury who gets really busy in April around the 15th, and there's a lot of processing that has to go on. Well, instead of, you know, designing and building and over-provisioning on-premise assets or capital assets for, you know, worst case, you know, scenario, you know, you can scale down a little bit, you know, build your on-prem infrastructure for your steady state, and then have a plan and be able to leverage the cloud those times when you have to burst out, because you burst out, use it for when you need it, but only pay for what you use. You're not over-provisioning assets that are just kind of sitting there underutilized. We also have customers that are using it as an extension of their on-prem data center to just do test dev. We have one customer who's using the cloud to do all their development and QA work. They're doing all the dev work in the cloud, and they're promoting some of it back on-prem for production. Some, they're leaving it out there for production, but they're using it for test dev. We have some customers using it for labs. We have some customers using it for like training environments. They have to quickly spin them up for like 30 days and then take them down, and they're able to do that. The fourth use case is disaster recovery, whether that is providing DR for net new applications, whether that's some customers are looking at the cloud, looking at VMC to augment existing disaster recovery. Some of them are using it to completely retire their existing DR and using the cloud as a DR site. It's really up to kind of, you know, what the applications, the mission, and kind of what your overall strategy is. But you can, you know, we have users using it for multiple different things. We do have a managed DR as a service component in our commercial region, where it's the whole DR component itself is fully managed. That will be making its way in the GovCloud probably sometime in 2023. Because it is a shared service and it's a SaaS offering, it's going to have to go through the FedRAMP certification. And then lastly, something that's probably been the most popular use case for the past 12 months has been running virtual desktops in the cloud. And that's customers that either want to fully, you know, retire their on-prem VDI farms and move them to the cloud. They want to build a certain number in the cloud to be able to burst out to when their on-prem allocation, when their on-prem resources start to get taxed, or they want to have a balance of both, to be able to load balance across both an on-prem VDI farm and a farm that's in the cloud. And I want to take that and lead into an actual real customer that we have. I won't name the agency, but this organization reached out to us in March of 2020, right when the pandemic started. Things hadn't been closed yet, but, you know, they were rapidly heading that way. They had a large number of users that were spread out all over the country that were going to be, you know, that weren't going to be able to come into an office and had to get work done. And we're looking for a way to, they couldn't, they already had VMware's VDI platform in their data center. But given the circumstances, they weren't going to be able to procure hardware fast enough, let alone get people in the building to be able to provision it, to rack it, stack it, and get it turned up and get it configured fast enough to be able to support their remote users that were most likely going to be remote within 2 weeks. So they came to us with this question of, can we run virtual desktops in the cloud? So we did a quick proof of concept with them. Everything worked fine. And then this customer went from zero presence in the cloud to almost 2,000 desktops within a matter of 3 weeks. And then the entire time they were out and weren't able to come into the office, they were able to spread their user workload, distribute the workload across. If users started to log in, they would first hit their on-prem data center first. Then as that started to scale up and reach a certain threshold, their load balancers would start to then provision users in the cloud. And it's funny, it got to the point where some of the users got savvy enough to know that they were being run out of the cloud and their performance was actually better. So they were asking for that on a full-time basis versus, you know, kind of luck of the draw when they logged in. But this was a really good success story. And it was really good to be able to support a customer who had a real mission need and a real crisis to be able to help them solve a problem, be up and running, you know. And I got to think, you know, in the years I've been dealing with government, going from zero to 2,000 users in about 2.5 weeks, that's got to be some sort of record that we set there. But it's a great story. From a partner perspective and from a procurement perspective, we work primarily with our friends at Carahsoft. We also work with a lot of the same reseller partners that you all work with on a daily basis. We're on a lot of contracts, you know, GSA, on Schedule 70, SOUP, other contracts that were, and that's growing, you know, by the week or by the month, especially as we now get close to our FedRAMP ATO. In addition, this is another list that keeps growing exponentially on a monthly basis. The number of third-party vendors, third-party technology solutions that are integrating directly with VMC, whether it's writing directly to it or integrating it through the API set, you know, around all different segments of technology. One more use case from one customer I was talking about. This is another customer in the defense space. They were doing some security work and were looking for ways to, and they couldn't obviously get equipment brought into the data center and stood up last year. So they looked at the cloud as a place to be able to provision a couple of hosts. You know, once they procured, they were provisioning time to build a software-defined data center, you know, in the cloud. A typical configuration is the base 3-node, 3 hosts that requires a minimum. It takes about 2 hours from start to finish. We're able to do that to them, and they started using it for using that lab for remote users to be able to come in and their testers to be able to go in and test new code. A lot of it had to do with security patching and cyber tools, but they were able to meet that objective, not have any downtime, not have any losses in productivity, just by leveraging the cloud to be able to quickly spin up and deploy environments for them to do their testing and QA work on. Okay, I want to wrap up here real quick with just a couple of items around, just to kind of summarize what we talked about and give some data points around it. Some of the key benefits of VMC on AWS. As I said before, it's really the best of both worlds. You get the rich, robust tools of VMware Software-Defined Data Center with vCloud Foundation paired with Amazon's backend tool set of all their applications and their global footprint and reach within the AWS architecture. Zero refactoring. The time and cost from migrating from on-prem to the cloud is greatly reduced, sometimes years, months to even, you know, days, because you don't have to rebuild or redo anything. Leveraging existing skills, as I said before, no need to have to relearn anything. It's the same look and feel. It's what you're doing today. You're doing the same thing in VMC. As I said, the only difference is where the data lies. Lastly, is around cloud economics. This was an IDC study that they did, but they interviewed, you know, several VMC customers, and did some drill down into kind of what they were seeing from an ROI perspective. They were seeing about a 351% ROI over 3 years with a break-even point at 8 months. And what that means, that 8 months means is, and obviously 46% faster migrations and a 57% lower overall cost of migration. And what that means is, you see this thing called this migration bubble here? That's something that everybody who is moving to any cloud of any type you have to account for this migration cost bubble. What that means is it's that period of time by which you're essentially paying into both buckets, because you still got to maintain either support or SNS on your existing on-premise footprint while you're migrating to the cloud, where you've also got to pay for that cloud footprint. The further to the left that you can pull this migration bubble in, the faster the benefit realization comes in. What that means is we have some EGS estimates that it would take about 7.5 years to fully migrate, 100 applications based on some industry averages. And that's because you've got to, a lot of the re-engineering that has to take place. You can cut that down. The further you pull that to the left, the lower that migration cost bubble becomes. The other thing that you take advantage of, that we've seen customers have the benefit of too, is with some of the hardware that we have, we don't limit you to how many virtual machines, how many VMs you can run in VMC. It's completely governed by the nature of the workloads themselves, what your SLAs are, et cetera. We don't limit that. And the more density you get, obviously, the better the investment becomes over time. So we've talked about hybrid cloud. We've gone over some of the benefits. We've talked about VMware Cloud and AWS. The one question we get all the time from customers is, this is great. How do we get there? What's step one? Obviously, number one is understanding app rationalization is probably the number one thing. Understand what applications you have, what can go where, what can be privatized, what can go in the public cloud, et cetera. What's better suited for edge cloud? What's better suited for private cloud? Secondly, is doing some sort of analysis. We have a cloud economics team that can put together a specific total cost of owner, a 3-year ROI and TCO for you based on your actual parameters in your environment. And then lastly, we can share some of these out. Is we have some hands-on labs that are available for, they're essentially the VMware labs that we offered. They're free to use for customers and partners to go in and start, playing with the tools and getting their hands on them and seeing what it looks like. And additionally, we have a whole fleet of professional services people here at VMware that can help with some of the work, help with some of the assessments to kind of answer these four big questions. Am I ready to go to cloud? Help me with the rationalization. Help me do a cloud readiness assessment. What does my networking need to look like? What can I move? What fits best where? What should my overall picture look like? What should my roadmap be? It's a journey. It's not a rip the Band-Aid off and just go. How do we get there over time? What am I move first? Let's look at all of my application dependencies. Let's look at, my portfolio assessment. Let's see what I have. Again, where do I go? What can I go full cloud native? What needs to be just migrated in place? What can I do a lift and shift? Then lastly, how do I execute? Any education services around, taking on something new? There's a skill set that you don't have. We've got education courses on that around specific cloud technologies, like around hybrid cloud extension, for an example, or maybe NSX in the cloud, those sorts of things. That's all I had for today.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like more information on how Carahsoft or VMware can assist your organization, please visit www.carahsoft.com. or email us at vmware@carahsoft.com. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.